Erotic.
Boom. It's time for episode number 4 of my favorite podcast, your favorite podcast, everybody's favorite YouTube series and pro wrestling podcast. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, to the Meltdown. My name's Tom Finkiel. I'm repping over here in good old Manchester, UK, where for the first time this year, the sun has decided to make an appearance. And for any other Brits that are listening to this show right now or watching us live in beautiful panoramic colour, you'll know what happens to Brits when it gets a little bit sunny. We have been waiting for this heat to come all the way through autumn and winter, begging for summer to start. And as soon as it does, the day it starts, we're all too hot. We're all too hot. It's too hot here. It's too hot. Get those fans on. It's the way that we feel. You know it. I know it. We're all living it right now. So, yes, I'm sat here in my drip, I am sweating cobs. But I tell you what, my heat in Manchester is nothing like the heat across the pond. I'm going to pitch it over to my big brother over there. Bush, the creation of devastation, is ready to rock episode 4. And this episode of The Meltdown is very, very special. Brian, how's your week been, man?
Oh, been great, man. I want to go ahead and welcome TikTok Universe. That is the Tomcat of Manchester. And yours truly would like to welcome today's guest. He's a longtime great friend of mine. And he is a former three-time World Tag Team Champion in the WWF. And get ready for this list, okay? A Ring of Honor World Champion. A Ring of Honor Tag Team Champion. A Ring of Honor six-man champion and the TNA Digital Media Champion. And let's not even forget about the Crockett Cup Tournament Champion. This is a future Hall of Famer, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome my old road dog and travel partner. That's right, the French-Canadian Frankenstein PCO, Carl Ouellette. How are you doing, my friend?
Doing great. How are you doing?
Hey, man, I am just really excited that we got you on. I was telling Tom earlier when we started, we're on episode number 4 now, and I was telling Tom, I was like, man, the one guy that I want to start this series with, PCO.
And that's a shoot, by the way. Yeah, that is a shoot. That's
that
no rib.
Fact. I reached out to Carl and no problem. He says, let me know, man. I'll be there. So from us here at the Meltdown, man, we appreciate it. So thank you for being here.
And you know, there's a lot of people asking for different podcasts. So yeah, it was no hesitation when you asked me. I said, hey, I'll be there, brother, you know, for sure. Because we go back such a long way. We met not too long ago in Montreal, which was great. You know, we had like a dinner with some of our friends, and you came in for a virtual. So that was awesome. You know, I was so glad that you were there, and we got to meet, like, not just in a convention style, you know, like when you go to a convention, you don't have time because we're always busy. So we had time to really lay down the stories and the memories and everything. So that was a great time for me. Great time to reconnect, you know, because also when we work, we're so focused on what we have to do that a part of like riding on the road, we don't have really much time for each other, you know, because we all focus on the task, right?
Yeah. No, I was really grateful to get to see you again and again for us to go out to dinner. Like I said, break bread, have a meal, big steak dinner with a lot of our friends, JF and the crew there in Montreal. And so, yeah, it was a very successful event for me. And of course, to get to see you made it even better. So like I said, really glad to see you. And then again, we got you here. You are on the Meltdown.
We love
episode
it.
Number 4, man.
Congrats. Big hype.
Yeah, honestly. Congrats on the Meltdown, by the way, you know. It's doing great. I've seen clips everywhere. TikTok, all over the place, Facebook, Instagram. You guys are all over the place, so that's great, you know.
Well, thanks to Tom. Well, it is. And Tom is really the catalyst behind this. He does such a great job of putting things together. Makes it so much easier for me. I definitely cannot do this without Tom. We are definitely a cohesive unit. Very happy to be working with the Tomcat himself.
We are like the mega powers, honestly. We, albeit better than Hogan and Savage were back in the day. Oh, yes. We've got it. One of the big things as well is because this wasn't blowing smoke. It was absolute truth, full on shoot, no rib, that Brian said, when we start having guests, we've got to make sure that Carly's with us first. So to be with us, mate, honestly, it means the absolute world. So doing my research, as we always do, some of the massive accolades that you've got next to your name are unparalleled. You are one of the only athletes in the world that have performed at a high level in, check this out, WWE, WCW, ECW, TNA, GCW, and Ring of Honor. There is nobody else that has hit all those milestones like the PCO has. And now he's found his new home in Maple Leaf Pro. Tell us a little bit about that and exactly what's coming up. We want to plug the show as much as we possibly can.
Well, that was an easy one for me because Cut the Moore was the president for TNA Wrestling, and he came, you know, with a lot of my great ideas, and he was my former boss. So I always felt like as a boss, Scott could shoot straight, you know. There's never any bullshit like, if he can't give you something, I'll tell you right away. No, that's impossible. It's not possible. And he's not going to let you think, you know, you're going to go along with the program and thinking that you're going to get something that you're not going to get. So, you know, right off the bat that, you know, you're not getting there if there's no plan for it. Yeah. So whatever, it's an opponent, whatever, it's an angle, whatever, it's a title or whatever, you know, he's just he just shoots straightforward. And that's what I like about him. And then when he asked me to join with Maple Leaf Pro, I said, yeah, I'll be there for sure.
It's so much better when you have just such a positive effect on a particular management role. And obviously you've had that positive effect on pretty much everybody that you've worked with. Everyone that we've spoke to just speaks so highly of you.
Oh, thank you. But I mean, it's hard to find, bosses or promoters, you know, that shoot straights like that, you know. There's always a little bit of, I wouldn't say lie, but plans that don't turn out the way you want, you know.
Okay, good. Well, that's going to lead me on to my first question, because I'm going to bat this to both yourself and to Brian, because both of you have worked for Vince McMahon and both of you have worked for Eric Bischoff. Mm-hmm. Give me some comparisons between the two. Is there any comparison? Is it night and day? Word me up, Vince versus Eric.
I mean, I don't think I was as friend as with Bischoff that I was with McMahon. I mean, me and Vince were like, without being friends, but he gave me total access. Like he said, like, anytime you want to have a talk with me, you just knock on my door. Vince was calling me on my phone for different things, like, hey, a certain guy, okay, IRS is injured. He won't make the show in Montreal. I need you to take his spot. He didn't have to do that, but he did it. So to make me feel probably important, or to make me feel like, you know, oh, Vince is calling me, you know, those people, they know what they're doing. So anyways, I felt important and, you know, I was proud that he was calling me myself, you know, by himself, not having the secretary or Briscoe or Pritchard or Patterson call me. It was direct from McMahon. So, which was, I thought that was pretty cool. I was in a good position too. He made a lot of promises to me, and things were going pretty smoothly for a while with Vince. I was in his good favors for a while. As far as Bischoff goes, like, didn't really, the thing is, like, I never wanted to go to WCW. That was mostly my partner that wanted to go there, because he originally, like, when he did all his indie work, he did a lot in Pensacola, in the South, you know, for Lawler and Southwest, USWA and Continental and all those, all those territories. So he knew Kevin Sullivan, he knew Colonel Robert Parker, because he had worked for him as a, Parker was his promoter, his boss. So he knew a lot of people down South, which I, for me, it was okay. I'm starting all over again, you know, start from scratch. So I didn't know nobody, but I felt personally that as far as organizing things and planning things, WWE was way more organized than WCW. That's nice. That's how I felt it.
Okay, so it's great to get Carl's perspective. All right, so I've got a picture building in my mind.
Because my first night, we're supposed to be that's our debut, and we're supposed to have a big win over the Nasty Boys.
Okay.
And Nasty Boys, they went straight up to Hulk and complained about they didn't want to do the job, and they switched the finish right on the first night that we got there.
Welcome to the party, pal. Let's back that to Brian then. Come on. We've not talked about Vince versus Eric yet on the show. Let's see what you've got to say.
No, we have not. And everyone, I've said this before, but everyone's experience is definitely different with each promoter or top of the chain, food chain there. With me, it was just the opposite. I had already worked for Vince. I had already done that grind of the 300 days on the road, which we'll get into a little bit later, but I just know what it was about. And for me, I felt that I lived in Atlanta, and it was just so much easier. I had a connection with Eric, and I actually felt appreciated for the first time. There was, it wasn't 300 days on the road. It wasn't three or four in a car. It was, it wasn't that grind. So I actually had a little bit of a life. I was able to train. I was able to take care of myself, take care of my family. So those were the things. And it, like with Carl, could actually go talk to Vince, where it was me, it was an issue. It always seemed to be a struggle to get to talk to Vince. Whereas with Eric, I could talk to Eric just about any time I wanted to. I agree with him as far as the organization part of it. They were more organized than we were, because we were just sort of up to the plate every Monday night and just pitching different things. So I do agree with that part of it. But as far as the other side of it, the welfare side of it, the even the mental health of side of it, of being in WCW, was much better for me personally.
Okay. Oh yeah, but it was. I won't say it was not a nice time that I had with WCW. But I felt like I was not known by the boys or by the organization as much as I had made my name in WWF, because, the retirement match, working on the main event there and having like that run with the titles and, right, and all that. So, like you said, it took me maybe a year before I was able to have a meeting, like talk properly to Vince himself. It took probably a year before he said hi to me, I could have a meeting with him. So when we're switching sides, I say, if I have to do all those effort to switch, go back to this and do that, start from scratch all over again.
Yeah.
It's not going to be fun, but I was willing to do it. But yeah.
Sorry, Brian. Go ahead, man.
No. I see both sides of it. Like I said, I think it all depends on where you are in your career. There's a lot of different variables there. So yeah, I definitely do see your side of it, Carl. Yes.
And also, I'm a guy from the North, so I grew up watching WWF, so when you grow up watching a product, that's the product that you want to be part of. So for me, it was, I remember because the day that we, that Jacques asked me to quit to go to WCW, and I said no, was at WrestleMania 10, because we were supposed to have a big win in the middle of the ring. Like, you know, we always, we were champions, but we always, like, cheated or our chicken shit heels, so to speak. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah, I get it.
Never a straight win in the middle of the ring. It's always something win by DQ with the Quebec rules or some stupid bullshit, you know? So they promised us that WrestleMania 10 was going to be our big, a big shine, you know, a big win straight in the middle, 1, 2, 3. And then at 4 p.m. in the afternoon, Patterson came by the ring and he said, "Hey, guys, I got to talk to you." He said, "I got a good news and a bad news for you." You know, Brian, when they say that, it's two bad news.
Of course.
Which one you want to know first, you know?
Yeah. Yes, of course.
So he said, "The good news, you'll retain the title, but the bad news will be a count out, you know?" So Jacques was fuming, you know, like, we give our, he said, "We're going to be professional, but we'll give them 3 months, you know, they can beat us every night. We'll be business. We'll drop the titles. We'll job every night, and we're going to Atlanta, you know, WCW. Okay. And the timing would have been perfect there because we were fresh out of being the champs, right?
Yeah.
But for me, it was like, no way, I'm not starting back again. And I just got the start to have a good, you know, relationship with McMahon and everybody around. And now you're telling me I'm going to have to switch and go to another company and start all over again. And also it was always a hard partnership with Jock, me and Jock. Like, we had a lot of, you know, not real fight, but, you know, a lot of hardship, you know. It was tough. It was not always easy to be tag team partners with him, you know. So I've had, like, a lot of tag team partners during my career, like, and we always got along great. And even when I did the Villain Enterprises, you make like three guys, you know, with Brody King and Marty Scurll.
Yeah.
I mean, it was cool. My first tag partner, we had so much fun as a tag team. But with Jock, I mean, it was a drag, you know. It was tough. It was tough. But the good moments were there, you know. I can't deny the good moments. And I cannot say he's not a good guy either. He's a good guy. It's just our characters. It was hard to fit together.
And that happens. That happens at times. I, for one, I was lucky, man. I was blessed to have Brian as my partner. And I got lucky. There's no doubt about it. I want to ask you, we're talking about your career and some of the amazing things you've done. I was looking at, I know you've been everywhere. Two things I want to cover real quick. Carl, I've noticed you've been doing a lot of commercials. I mean, you've been Australia, you've been Ireland, and now you're doing a lot of commercials for Ontario Hockey Pro League, which is promoting Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling. So, I mean, I see you, you're talking about us earlier, but I see you all over social media in such a good, positive way because you're such a positive person. I think that your positivity just rubs off on everyone you're around.
Yeah.
It's such a good thing, man. It is. I mean, your will, your determination, your commitment to your health, fitness, your training, all that's such a good positive vibe. I just wanted to get that out there.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. This thing with the OHL, I mean, that was one of the greatest things that I was at, you know, blessed to live, because
That's Tim Horton's voice.
I grew up as a hockey player, and I switched when I had my eye accident, when I lost my right eye, you know, when I got shot with a pellet gun when I was 12, I decided to pivot, you know, to pro wrestling 100%, you know, get all my energy in it. But I always, like, was attached to the hockey world, and still follow it very hardly. And when they asked me to get in the room and, you know, pump the guys for the starting lineup, naming the six players starting the game, and yeah. I put some sauce into it, you know, I was really involved, and it was a little bit of a downer, because they said if we're going to the Memorial Cup, which is the Canadian championship, like you got the Western Hockey League and the where Brett lives, and then Ontario, and then you have the Quebec League. So the three leagues, the champions of the three leagues, they all face up at one in one town. And this year it was in Quebec. And that team had the potential to go to the Memorial Cup. So they said, the kids, they loved you. It was, you know, you were their favorite guy that did the starting lineup of the year. And they had a blast, and they went on a winning streak after that. And they were supposed to bring me back to the Memorial Cup. And I said, if I'm there, and if they are at the Cup, I'm going to get on the bench, and I'm going to flip, you know, and take a back bump on the middle of the room, just to prime them up, you know. I was willing to do that. So I had that conversation with the coaches, and they were like, oh, fuck, the kids will love that. And so I was ready, and they lost in game 7 on the second series. I guess that's going to be for next year. But that was cool. That was really cool.
Yeah, I could tell, man, you really got them pumped up. They were really excited to have you there. That's some of the cool things that you get to do now, still being in the business that we both love. And I want to bring that up, because I thought it was
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just while we're on the topic, you mentioned about your right eye. Now, there's so many within the internet wrestling community of fans that think it's a gimmick. That always thought it was a contact lens, and obviously it's not. You went through that absolute tragedy of losing your eye. Do you want to tell us that story?
Oh yeah, it's just that we're just a bunch of kids and alone, you know, with no servants, you know, no parents, nobody around, and we all had a pellet gun, and we ran out of pellets, you know. After we shot about every bottle of pops in my house, and every birds that were around my house, and every human being maybe 500 meters, you know, by the house, we ran out of pellets, and then we started using the game, it's called pickup stick. So we start putting the sticks in the cannons and shooting ourselves in the legs. And I was just hiding behind the kitchen counter, my kitchen. And my friend went to shoot in my legs, and he got me in the eye. And that was the story. So I went to the hospital. I lost consciousness, and I woke up after 4 hours on the table, and I was blind, but I kept my eye. That's my real eye, but I don't have any vision from it.
Wow, man. What a story.
I remember Carl telling me the story while we were traveling. He told me about it. He actually, if I'm not mistaken, Carl, you told me that you pulled, your mistake was that you,
yeah, when I pulled,
you pulled it out, right?
I should have put a cup and tape it on top and let the doctor do it. So it wouldn't be any damage, because they would make the incision.
Yep.
I like to say the word like incision transaction, because I know it makes it pop, you know?
Yeah.
So, but they would make the incisions, and not damage the inside of the eye.
Yeah.
But when I pulled it, because it was a rounded edge, but, you know, that game, the pickup stick, there's two rounded edge. So when I pull, it kind of pulled all the crystalline out, you know.
Oof.
So, yeah. Oh. So that was, you know, 12 years old. You're already like trying to cheer up your family because everybody's down. I remember my grandmother was crying every day beside my bed, and my dad and my mom, and you have to cheer everybody up. Like, come on, we'll go through it, and it's going to be okay, and blah, blah, blah. So I was facing adversity at a very young age, and I think that what gave me my tenacity and my will to succeed in life, starting from that accident, or you could call it just a challenge, something like that, you know.
Yeah.
Starting from that challenge.
Well, we applaud you for it.
Yeah,
brilliant, man. Brilliant, absolutely. Well, let's get on something a little bit more lighthearted. And before we put a big bow on the Quebecers, with me being over here in the UK, we have a beautiful partnership with the US and the UK. And tonight we're also inviting the beautiful province of Montreal, Quebec, Canada, onto our show as well. The Meltdown is fully international. I want to take you back to a little night at the Royal Albert Hall in London. Do you remember the Men on a Mission versus Quebecers? And talk to us a little bit about what happened and why Men on a Mission became tag champions that night.
But that wasn't it. No, we got it back at the Royal Albert Hall. We lost it in Birmingham, England.
There you go. Okay. All right. So we flipped it. So it happened in Birmingham. And then
everybody thinks it's a mistake that Mabel was so big that I couldn't kick out. It's not true. And I debunked that so many times on the internet. That was the finish. That's how it was called. They just wanted to throw a surprise on the road.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. And it's one that I'm not picked up.
People are still talking about that today. Like,
well, we're talking about it right now.
that it was a mistake, and we're not supposed to lose in Birmingham, England. There's no point. It's a house show. It's not even like, I mean, Europe was always good, Brian. I think sold out everywhere, especially in Germany. But England was great. England was also great. I don't remember that there was any bad houses in England ever. But no, that night we knew we were going to lose against Men on a Mission, but they told us in 2 days you're going to get it back at Royal Albert Hall. So
well, that's an official debunk, then an official debunk right here on the Meltdown.
So you scoop right here on the Meltdown.
That was just his great ability to sell, so everyone believed it. He sold it so well that you know. People still believe it to this day. That's very good. I love it.
We've had some good chats about Mason.
Like, seriously, Mabel, when he splashed you, like you were looking for some air to grasp, you know, like you're pushing against some place in him so air could come in, you know, because he was so big.
He really was. I mean, he was like, what, 6'8"?
Yeah,
close to 5, yeah. And just massive, it really was. I worked him a few times, and I did
agile for his size.
For size,
But he wasn't. He injured a lot of people because he didn't think because he thought he was agile. He didn't think his weight could injure. Like he didn't have the. He didn't think like if he was gonna give someone a big leg drop or a splash, that could have been painful to the other guy. I think that's the way I look at it. Because he was a great guy, you know. Every time he hurt someone, it was never intentional, you know.
I agree with that. I just think he was so green and so young in the business. He got that break really early. I think he came out of Memphis. USWA and then into WWF. So yeah, he still hadn't had a lot of experience under his belt before they actually put those guys together and actually gave him a push. So yeah, you're right. I think
all the guys were pretty green. The singer, Oscar,
oh, yeah,
and Mo and everybody.
Yeah.
We're all pretty new to the business.
Oh yeah. They were.
They just needed more time on the road. And I've been so many events this week. I feel like I could have driven from Manchester all the way to California. It's been a long way. Ever driven in California, Brian?
Yes, I have. I've been the driver, and Carl was riding shotgun, and I can't remember who was in the back seat. I want to say either Bob Holly,
Duke Sid, maybe,
or both. Who?
Sid.
I don't know if Sid was with us. I don't think on that trip.
Not on that one.
No, this is where we got lost on the interstate in California. I want to say we were, I don't know if it was Sacramento or where it was, but a massive storm had blew in, tropical storm. I'm telling you, like the most rain I can remember beating down on a car while you're driving on the interstate.
So you'd say Bob Holly, you'd say?
I think maybe Bob was in the back seat, but you were definitely you were riding shotgun and I was driving and we got lost. And I say we got lost because there was some construction going on. And I was going like for miles off the road where I was supposed to be going. I was lost. Back then, there was no GPS. Again, raining so hard, I had no idea where I was going. And then you know, for miles and miles, and the lights come on, and the cop runs us down. I'm just like, what? Now what? You know? And this guy pulls us over, man, and he gets me out of the car and just belittles me for like 5 minutes. I mean, it's pouring rain. He got his Smokey the Bear hat on. He's like out of my chest. He's just, you know, he's not a real big guy, but he is just fuming hot. I mean, he's pissed, to say the least. Just up and down. And I thought, well, okay, can I just get the ticket and leave? And he just kept on and on and on. And you know, after 3 or 4 minutes of me, I'm completely soaked. And Carl rolls down the window and looks at him and says, "What is the infraction, officer?" I'm like, "Carl, don't say anything. This is not going to help. We're not getting talked out of this. We'll be lucky if we don't go to jail, or at least me, for taking the wrong way." Either way, man, I've had some great times with Carl on the road. That was one that there was no getting out of that one. I think I got a ticket. I'm almost positive I did.
I think we were fine. I think we got off without a ticket.
Well, I took the verbal abuse. How about that? I took the beat down.
Oh yeah, you did.
Oh, he belittled me. Unbelievable.
You do realize that if we have any issues on the meltdown going forward, I'm going to pull you up with, "What's the infraction, officer?"
Well, I'm going to tell you why I think we didn't get the ticket, because I remember one time me and Jock were late. We got to go to Erie, Pennsylvania. All right. And we're speeding up because we got there. We had the delayed flight. We called Vince. So we're going to be late at the show. We're going to get there by 7. And we're speeding like crazy. And then the cops, they pull us. And Jock is like, he's telling me, "Check this out. I swear to you that they will escort us all the way to the building and we won't have a ticket." So the cop comes by the door. So Jock gets out of the door, opens up the trunk, show the cops the belts, and said, "Listen, we're the world tag team champions for the WWF. We got a show in Erie, Pennsylvania. We're late. Can you escort us all the way to the building?" Believe it or not, they did it. And we didn't get a ticket. Yeah. Wow. So maybe that was my thinking. I mean, we didn't have any titles, but that was my thinking, saying, "Hey, officer, what's the interaction?"
Yeah.
And talk him into, like, let us go, you know.
And I'm sure Bob Holly was in the back seat losing his mind, you know, because any little thing would set him off anyway, right?
Call me Sparky.
Yeah.
I was thinking as I was making my notes, I was like, you know, we were clean machines during that era. There was no test. There was no nothing. But if Bob would have had just a little bit of test, he would have blew his mind.
Well, he was edgy. He would throw a fit like about every 15 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. It was our job to see if we could make guys crack. That's what we would do. Just a little thing. That was the fun part. I say fun. Maybe a strange way of looking at it, but if you could make the guys crack after, you know, 20 days, 25 days, 27 days on the road, and then it'll happen at a car rental or at the baggage claim or at the check-in, but it'll happen.
Yeah. So who did you crack? Who did you, I need to know this information right now. Give me a list. Correct.
Easily right off the top, I would think of Bob Holly, Billy Gunn. You know, those are two easy.
Because Billy was traveling. I think the main traveling group that we had was the five, me, you, Bob Holly, Bart Gunn, and Sid Vicious sometimes, right?
Yeah. Right. It varied depending on it would vary depending on when we got to the airport, who was there, kind of thing. But yeah, we did have a group that we either rotate or, again, sometimes, you know, the loop was shorter for some guys. Some guys had commitments at Stanford doing you know, vignettes, videos, different things. But yeah, we did have.
I think when you left to WCW, and I stayed, I think, you know, what year you left? Was 95?
95, yep.
Yeah, so I think me and Sid were always together after that, you know, and with still Bob and sometimes Billy and Bart, but I think we kept riding. So I think, that was our group there. I don't know how it came about that Billy transition with you know, the click, basically, which is nothing wrong with it, but
yeah, I don't know. That happened after I'd left, but you're right.
I saw him like in the last two shows because he does work a lot with Maple Leaf Pro. Yeah. And we always talk to each other, but you know, I never thought to go there, but even like as a just, hey, tell me how did you end up, you know, being, I guess, with Road Dogg? But I always got along good with Road Dogg too. So it's interesting to see how Road Dogg and Billy kind of switch, I guess, with the kid and Sean and Kevin back then. But
and it could have been a situation where they needed a tag team. You know, I see Bill. I was ran into Billy at a couple times this past week at WrestleCon in Vegas. You know, just as great as he could be, looked amazing, of course.
Yeah,
But I you know, it could be with those situations where, hey, we need a tag team, so let's get, you know, Billy and Road Dogg, put them together. Road Dogg was always great on the mic, so it really would fit that little area to trying to fill. It's hard to say. Without being there, but yeah, they I never thought about that. Why they made that move over, but it sort of
it worked. It worked for all of them, which is great.
Yeah.
Well, both of you were part of illustrious and iconic tag teams, whether it be the Quebecers or Chronic. But in terms of your singles run, I want to take you back a little bit, and I'm going to show the clip as we talk about it, to a lost match. I say a lost match. It lives in infamy within the internet wrestling community, and that's the match that you guys had on Action Zone. So the clips are going to roll as we have a little chat about that, about your singles run as the Pirate Jean-Pierre Lafitte, and what your memories are about working with the big man here.
Yeah, I remember without watching it.
I do too.
Is that a good thing?
No, it was good. That was fun. I mean, that was fun for me. That wasn't fun for Brian because he just came out of a meeting and he was pissed. So, yeah, he was so pissed. He was so pissed.
What about
that night? Not that night, but he knew that night that, you know, his time was like almost done in WWF. So, for him to go there and to perform the way that he did, I mean, that shows how professional he was, you know. And for me, I just wanted to have, like, a good match with one of my best friends in the business, you know. So at that time, we just wanted to tear it up, you know, just have a great one. And it was fun, but I know where he was coming from and what he was promised and things like that. And yeah, to say the least, he wasn't happy during that afternoon.
Do you remember that meeting, Brian?
I honestly do not, for some reason. I'm sure if Carl says it, that is probably on point with it. I just knew that we would have a great match. We were friends.
Yeah.
And we had the chemistry there. And people do not give Carl enough credit of how fast he is. If you watch that match, you see the speed of which he comes off the ropes. I mean, he looks like he's just nonstop, like a freight train. I mean, and all the major things he would take. I mean, he took like a backdrop out on the floor. He took some amazing bumps off the top. I did a dive over the top. We did stuff that big guys were not doing. And we were both safe. We took care of each other. And I loved it. I'd worked Carl, I think, a few previous shows, maybe international somewhere. But that one actually was for, I think it was, like you said, Action Zone. Yeah. But yeah, man, I love working with Carl. No doubt about it.
I remember when you had a good drop kick, you know, you had your sin shot over the top rope, like either in the ring or outside the ring. Right. And for a guy 6'5", you know, nearly 290, nearly 300 pounds, like, you're flying, you know, like you had the whole package. And from what I remember, you just came out of a meeting with Vince, and, you know, they had promised you the Intercontinental title. And I think they were switching ideas. Say, we're still going to do it, but not now. We want to go with Sean for a while, and then we'll go back to you later on. And that's when you felt like maybe they've been working you a little bit, you know. That's my take on it. I might be wrong.
No, well, everything you just said did happen. I think also I had an energy drink deal that they pulled out from under me. It was sort of like a Slim Jim deal that Randy had, but it was an energy drink. And I'd already met with the board of directors, and it was all a go. And then at the last minute, Vince snatched it. So it was just a combination of those things building up.
Yeah. Adding frustration.
Yeah. You got to know when to stay.
Days in and day out. And not seeing your family that much and things like that, because we were. I remember I was on the road one time for 45 days almost.
Wow.
Yeah, when you do your washing on the road, you know you've been on the road for a while.
Yeah. But nonetheless, you had the people, no? now, Tom, I'll fill you in, Tom. That's the joke between us. That's what, after we'd worked each other for a loop or so in Europe, and we had everything down. We were doing all our high flying. He was doing all his crazy bumps, and we were doing everything. Had the people, I mean, from every hole building up, we had the whole arena rocking. We come back through the curtain.
As soon as you approach, whichever agent, we had the people.
It was Patterson. Patterson. Oh, yeah, Patterson. Like, he was asking the question of, did you get them or not? Did we get the people?
Yeah, the people, no?
Yeah, of course we did. Just, you know, I don't know if that was his way of sarcasm or what it was at the time. But either way, we know we had him. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
The crowd were going banana.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to love that footage. To see that footage is going to be good. I'm glad we're adding that in. That's going to be nice.
It's great. Yeah. So many good times for me as a viewer and as a fan of the past, to be able to watch you guys and then obviously interact with you on this is brilliant. But there are so many high levels of talent that PCO has been in the ring with. And we're talking about current talent. We're talking about WrestleMania headliners from CM Punk to Gunter. What's it been like working with such massive names of today in comparison to working with some massive names of the 90s?
But Walter, when I wrestled him, it was during the WrestleMania 34 weekend in New Orleans, Louisiana. That was my breakout, my breakthrough match into where we are now. Where we are now, like that was like after that match, my phone was ringing like every day for until like companies offered me like great deal like AEW and ROH, and I decided to sign with ROH because AEW at the time when they wanted to sign me, they only had like pay-per-views planned, you know. They had the Double or Nothing, they had like the game show in Jacksonville, I believe, where they have like, you know, people from gaming that they do a pay-per-view once a year. They have maybe two more. And I had just came back from Sinclair, the TV stations, the big office. They had ROH flew me in. I met the president of ROH and the booker, and they showed me every aspect of the business, the big Sinclair all the way up to the president office. And then they showed me the ROH dojo, which was like a few miles apart from the Sinclair offices, or it's almost like the Titan Tower, you know. It's a big building with a lot of pretty impressive. So I had to spend a whole day there. And I had made a deal with Joe Koff, who passed last year or earlier on this year. And he was a great guy, a great president too. And, everything that they promised me during that meeting, they delivered with everything. So, and then I had the AEW calling me on the other side and saying, don't sign that deal with ROH. We want you. We're going to give you that match or for that pay-per-view plus a deal on the side. And I didn't know what the deal on the side was going to be. I didn't get any further than saying that, well, I just came back and I shook hands with them. And I was pretty happy with what they offered me. So I would feel bad to say, you know, that handshake that we had and the deal that we made, I cannot commit to it because I expect the same if somebody commits to me. And for me, I'm maybe old school, but a good handshake, you know, when you look someone in the eye and you say, we got a deal. To me, that's the value of a contract, even if it's not signed. So that's maybe the reason why that's the reason why I didn't sign with AEW, and also not knowing what was ahead of them too. I didn't even know at the time who Tony Khan, like I knew he was rich, but I don't know how much money he was willing to spend in that business. And everybody had moved, like the Bucks and Cody, and everybody was switching. So I thought to myself, you know, might as well stay here. They have 216 TV stations. They got syndicate TVs, whatever. And yeah, so that was the reason why I decided to stay.
Everything happens for a reason. And you've become such a massive cult figure within the wrestling community that we just absolutely applaud you. You are the perfect creation one. We love it. Yes.
We're proud of you, man. We're really proud of you. No doubt about it.
Oh, it's funny because to go back to that Walter and the CM Punk match. So I had that match with Walter, and then I didn't know that, but I worked him in Germany like early on when he was only 16. But everybody, it was a big buzz on the indie scene about Walter was the man. He was going to be the next guy to get picked up. You know, he was the king of PWG, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla in California. Everywhere he was, you know, he was like the champ. He was the ring general already. He was super over. So everybody knew he was the next big thing. So when Janela offered me to wrestle Walter, I said, who is Walter, you know? So I watched some of his matches, but I couldn't recognize him from when I wrestled him when he was 16 in Germany. And then he knew me, so that added to the chemistry when I got there. And then when we got there, we had the people. So we really, really, it's probably one of my best, the best, one of the best, top 10 match of my career. One of the top, my favorite in my career. For what it gave to my career, and also it gave him a lot of credit too. So it was good for both of us. And then ROH starting dealing with Walter, me and Walter, we kept in touch. And he was giving me the numbers they were offering him. So when Walter turned down ROH to sign with WWE, I knew the numbers. So ROH is calling me because he can't get Walter. And they offering me a deal. But I know his numbers. So I gave his numbers that he had already agreed on before he went to WWE with ROH.
Wow. Insider trading.
Yeah. So that was good for me. So, and then after 1 year, ROH, it was pretty crazy. And money was as good as WWE, seriously, when I was there. And they doubled my salary for the next 2 years after my first year. So it was a 3 year. And then one of the year was great because we're getting paid and it was a pandemic. So it was a good luck for me, you know, it's a good timing for me, not for them, but for me, it did work out well. And then after closed down because of the pandemic, which was the end of my contract, which was December 30th, I think, or December 16th was the end of my contract. A couple of weeks after, I signed for TNA, and I was there for three and a half years. 3 years for sure, maybe three and a half. So,
shall we have a little chat about TNA? Shall we do that? Let's talk about, obviously, the PCO character evolved so much, and it's still evolving all the time. It's evolving. And that's what, as wrestling fans all around the world love to see, is the evolution of characters. And Brian's been through it as well. Everything from the Night Stalker to Adam Bomb to Wrath to the evolution of Chronic. You have been through it from Quebecca Pierre to Jean-Pierre Lafitte to what we see now in PCO. But let's just have a little chat about, we've been through all the beautiful build in TNA, and I've been watching some of your past matches just to refresh my memory. There was a match that you had with Steve Maclin. I'm sure it was pay-per-view. You'll pull me up on it. And I think it was Under Siege 2023. Yeah. Do you remember it? Yeah. That weapon-filled, gimmick-filled brawl that had, honestly, I'm sat there, I'm researching, I'm sat there, and my daughter, my 10-year-old daughter, walks in. And at the moment that she walked in, Steve was stapling your mouth shut.
Yeah.
So she's like, is it really doing that? I'm like, just head out. Don't ask questions you don't want to know the answers to. Yeah.
That was the time that even Hogan was talking about it. He couldn't believe it. That was crazy.
That was some crazy stuff. It was.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a 304 staple, and end up being the whole gun. End up being my old mouth stapled, you know. But
it fit the character.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to do that for, because I wanted to have that scene, you know, that you have in the movie, that I wanted to have, like, live in a wrestling match. And that was a title match, dude. That was for Steve's title. He was a world champion at the time, so I was challenging for the title. So we just wanted to make sure that we were going to go all out and just be crazy.
Nothing was left on the table when it came to
that. There was a lot of blood in that match.
There was a lot of blood in that match. Steve lost guns in that match.
Yes.
We had staple guns and cinder blocks and baseball bat and all sorts.
And he was not easy on the sledgehammer, and he was not easy on the chair shot. I mean, he was bending the chairs over my back. So I think it was a good match, and you know? I think it was a great to watch for the fans if they haven't watched it.
It was a definite spectacle, and we like snug, don't we, Brian?
That's the way I've always done it. And I know that for one, Carl has never phoned in a match. Carl has always brought it every single night, no matter if it's like he said, 20 days in a row or 45 days in a row. This guy never phoned it in ever. And still not phoning it in. So that's just goes to show his work ethic. And he calls it tenacity. I don't know. There's a lot of other words for it, but respect. That's the one you got to, the people need to know the most.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, let's line that up then. From a status of respect, I'm going to bat this on to you, Carl. And we've not mentioned this, so we might be throwing you under the bus, but we're going to find out. So here on The Meltdown, we like to lay up the Mount Rushmores of different types and styles within the professional wrestling world. And I'm going to ask you for your Mount Rushmore of French Canadian professional wrestlers. Who would your four be? Who would be up on that Mount Rushmore?
French Canadian?
Yes. Let's see what we've got.
Well, I got two for sure, like Dino Bravo and Rick Martel for sure.
There we go. They were ones that Brian was talking to me about before. Yeah, they were on the list.
Yeah, because I grew up watching them, and Dino is almost 7 years the world champ. He was the Bruno Sammartino of Montreal, you know, like of international wrestling, like he was the main guy, and Ricky, 19 months AWA world champion. So, well, when he was wrestling in Montreal, he would always bring the AWA belt. So that's two for sure. Mm-hmm. And then you can go like so many ways, you know.
Let's find out which avenues we're going to take.
I don't know. Because do you count Andre the Giant as a French Canadian, or do you count Edouard Carpentier as a French Canadian?
Because that was my number three.
Yeah,
because Carpentier is the one who got me hooked on wrestling. Because when I was going to play my practicing hockey at 6 a.m. in the morning, and I had cable, the first ever documentary that I watched on pro wrestling was Edouard Carpentier. And he was a gymnast before, and he was a good diver. He was doing like all the flips into the on the dive, you know. And it's almost like the first time that I've seen Conan the Barbarian, which, you know, seeing that documentary with Carpentier. Mm-hmm. He was such in a great shape back then that I got hooked on wrestling just by watching this documentary. So I would have to put him there. What would you say? He's from France, but he died in Quebec, and all his life he was in Quebec, you know, like maybe he went back, but and also I went to his wrestling school also, so yeah, I would have to put him there. And it's tough for the fourth one, but I mean, for maybe I would put like there's some guys I didn't know, like Carpentier. I could watch a documentary. I could watch some of his matches, but like I know, like Johnny, the Rougeau's ankle was very very. Like, he was the star. Like, back then, you had hockey and wrestling in Montreal, and they both would fill out the Montreal Forum. And Johnny was, like, very successful. And then he became the governor of the Quebec Hockey Junior Major League. And he became one of the owner of a hockey team. Mike Bossy played in his team, and a lot of great players. But I didn't know him enough to put him there. And when I knew Joe Leduc, it was towards the end. But I had so many stories about how he brought up the Memphis territory, from Jerry Lawler to Bill Dundee to Jimmy Hart to anybody that had been to Memphis. They would say the business was dead. Joe Leduc came in. And it was sold out everywhere. So maybe I'd put Joe LeDuc.
Maybe Joe would be fourth.
Yeah.
That's a great list.
The Giant too, you know, because he was a big draw. And they picked him up from Vince Senior.
Yeah.
No, he picked up the Giant from Montreal.
Well, I got three of your four. So that's, I mean, I was close. But yeah, you threw in a couple that I had forgot about. Like,
who was your fourth one?
Shall we tell him who the fourth one was?
I've got actually four and a half, and I'm going to explain myself. Now, you're too modest.
I'll let Brian dive over.
All right, Tom, tell me here now. I got four and a half. The reason being, now I'm my fourth, and you're going to be too modest to say it, but I'm going to put you on there, Carl, just because of the length of your career and the amazing achievements that you have done. I listed off all your titles, and you're not even done with your career. You still got more to go. So I'm going to put you up there, whether you like it or not. So there's my four. Okay. My four, but I've got a half of a person that are a 0.5, if you will. Do you know who that might be, Carl?
The Mountie, maybe? Rougeau?
No, I said a half. So,
oh,
you know Bubba.
You know Bubba.
Tiger Jackson, Bubba.
Yeah, you have him there?
No, Bubba. Yeah, there you go.
Okay. So, no, but he's been around, and
he's done it, yes.
Yeah.
He doesn't get credit, honestly, but think about his career. He had really long, successful career and a superstar in Quebec.
Oh, yeah. So,
yeah.
Now, for sure, after Little Beaver, I think Tigers like was right after him as far as midget. Sky Lolo, Little Beaver, and Tiger was like... Because Tiger was, when he was in shape, you could spin him on his head and do tons of things with him. And
that was just in the bar.
he was funny too, you know.
So, he was funny.
For those of you that are trying to place Tiger Jackson.
Yeah, so your first three, Brian, were Martel, Bravo, and Carpentier?
Correct.
Wow. That's kind of weird, huh?
Yeah, well, I did my research, and I'm trying to think of the lines that you were thinking of, and I said, okay, he's not going to put himself on the fourth one, but you are the fourth one, and then if I did my one half or my 0.5, will be Tiger Jack. So there, that's why. Yeah,
Tiger's a legend. Yeah.
Yes, he is,
and a great, anyone's looking wonderful to, person. To pick him, Tiger Jackson portrayed Dink. The clown.
Yeah.
There you go.
But mini Macho Man, mini, he did so many characters before he did Dink.
Tell me a Dink story.
So many.
Okay, great. But I'm sure
I don't know either
between you and Brian, you'll have one.
I know we're on a tour. Well, guys were pretty rough on Dink, you know, like they ribbed him a lot. I know they put it on the upper carry-on compartment one time in the flight, and he was like, guys, let me out. I mean, there was so many other like stories but that's one I remember. Do you have one, Brian? Do you have one on Dink?
It's not really that anyone was ribbing him, but I roomed with him. I was on the road with him, and he needed a partner to travel with. And I said, yeah, get in, let's go. And I did a loop with him, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. We split a room, everything. It was just amazing because I had never really spent that much time with a little person. So I noticed that when it was bedtime, he only used half the bed. So he would fold it. He was very organized, like unbelievable. He would roll the sheets in bed down halfway through. And then he would set out. He'd have all of his gimmicks, all of his boots, trunks, everything were in Ziploc bags. And he would all have it all laid out for the next day. Whatever he was wearing, he was like a little businessman. But yeah, I just remember him sleeping on just the upper part of the bed. And then the lower part of the bed was all of his gear. Just perfection laid out. Yeah. I remember that, but yeah. So that's one of my stories.
Another story that I can tell you about him. Like, yeah, he's a big worker. Like, even though after like he was done with wrestling, he started cutting grass and everything business. And he made good money and he sold it for a good price. So he was always like, busy. He never let the fact that he was a small person downgrade him, you know. He was always like a normal person, like finding jobs or open up his own business and buying some properties and things like that. So he's And I don't think he was that organized as far as, financial coaches and things like that. I think he could have saved more money if he was, let's say, he would have been incorporated and then the incorporation would have paid him a salary or a dividend or, you know, like those terms that I don't think he never got into it, but he... always saved. He saved one of the boys that saved his money. I can say he's well off.
Good for him.
And you hear so many stories about Najit being, you know, pretty wasted on alcohol and things like that because it's a tough life. You know, it's not easy.
Yeah.
And he's like you said, very organized, very proud.
Yep.
Yeah, he's doing well in life.
Yeah, that's the biggest takeaway I got from how he was very professional. Like you said, very organized, very professional, and fun to be around. He always made me laugh. Anybody that can make me laugh while I'm on the road after the 20-day mark is just a big plus, you know? So, yeah, cool. I enjoyed being around him. Yep.
I think that's a future guest on the Meltdown. I think we need to get Tiger Jack. We'll get Carl back as well.
I don't know how good he could be in English. I guess enough to get by.
It'd be tough. It'd be
fun for the listeners, you know?
Yeah. Yes, it would be. I agree.
We love it. Well, absolute legends of the beautiful French-Canadian wrestling scene. Thank you so much for your four. And honestly, from the conversation that Brian and I had before you jumped on, they were honestly, as a shoot, the three that we said all rounded up to you, and you were the fourth. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Brian. I don't know where we at, but July 5th.
There we go. That's what I was going to segue.
Perfect. Great timing. Go ahead, Carl.
No, I just wanted to. There's a lot of pressure there, you know, to sell out 5,000 people with a pretty, you know, not a. It's an old company that got resurrected like, in October, last October. So they've done 4 shows in London. We're doing the old Madison, not Madison, but the old Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto on May 10th. And I am in that gauntlet match for the world, Canadian world title, or I don't know what it's called, but it's the title of the company, the highest title of the company. And then July 5th, we're coming in Montreal, and it's a huge building. And last year with TNA, we had the biggest house in the history of TNA under Anthem. So they haven't got past that number yet, which was like about 4,000 people. I think the last big house they had was in 2011 when Hogan was there, and it was 6,000 and something people. So so I really take pride of in that, because the way I take my bookings towards July, you know, it's they're going to be pretty much very apart, because I want to spend as much time as possible to promote the event and be on TV, just regular TV shows and radio shows, and make sure that everything is full blast publicity wise and promotion wise, that we're read on and we're the talk of the town. So we'll see how it goes with the playoffs. Montreal Canadiens are playing tonight. If they lose tonight, they're going to be out of the playoffs. But whatever, we'll play with whatever happens. If they keep winning, I mean, you know, when the Montreal Canadiens are in life, that's the only thing that Montreal talks about. But I think they'll make some place for PCO.
There you go. Absolutely.
The end of the show or something, or in between two periods, or just being in the crowd or whatever. But really want to have success with that show. So, yeah, it's called Resurrection because that's a little bit about my character. That's the second year that I'm going to be part of the July show in Montreal. And it's also the resurrection of Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling this year. So it's like a 3-way thing, you know, for Resurrection.
Well, we're going to sing it from the rooftops here on the Meltdown. Go out if you are in the area. Even if you're not in the area, head over to mlpwrestling.com. You guys can get your tickets in to go and see PCO do stuff that only PCO can do. Because as everybody knows, PCO is not human.
Yeah. Let's
take it and smash it. Box office all across. Hit it hard. Get those people in the seats. There needs to be a butt every 18 inches. Let's sell it out for MLP Wrestling. And for those of you that can't join them in person, you can pick it up anywhere in the world, even right here in Manchester, England, on Triller TV. It's there. You can see it all live and in living color. And we want to see PCO do stuff that only PCO can.
Thank you. Also, I got a movie coming out on May 29th. So I've been talking to Michael Weber, I think, Triller TV. I'm trying to get it on the streaming for Triller TV. So even if it was for 2 to 3 months, you know, I'd be happy.
So awesome. Congrats, man.
PCO Justice.
Love it. Hey, man,
it's done now. Post-production, I just watched the last version today. It's almost ready to can, so we're doing the launch on the red carpet on the May 29th Thursday. So you'll probably hear about it.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, man, anything you want to share our way, including your new movie, absolutely. We'd be happy to push it. Again, the big May 10th show, Maple Leaf Gardens. Then, of course, it's going to be a sellout. You might as well go ahead and get your tickets now. Look at that. July 5th at the Coliseum with PCO. I mean, hey, everybody's going to be looking forward to that. I know that it's a big thing for Maple Leaf Pro, and I'm glad to see that you're a part of it. And a new movie on top of that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you got all the scoops.
I got all the scoops. Yeah. And now I can let everybody know. So this will air this coming Monday. And I want to thank you for taking the time out to come visit us today on the Meltdown. Again, all of our respect. You know how much we love you, man. And continued success. More championships in the ring, more championships in life. Much love, my man. Great seeing you.
Yes, man. Thank you so much, guys. Appreciate it.
An absolute pleasure having PCO with us. Thank you so much for being a part of the Meltdown. We have just heard from Perfect Creation 1. He was our first absolutely incredible out of this world and truly resurrected guest here on the Meltdown, and he didn't disappoint. Thank you so much to PCO for joining us and giving us the insight as to all the wonderful stories, the road stories of the atom bomb days of the mid-90s. We took it back to the New Generation era, and we brought it all the way up to date with MLP Wrestling. So I'm going to bat it over to the big man from here in Manchester, over the pond. I'm going to see you next week here on the Meltdown. Boom.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. And thank you to our special guest, PCO, a longtime friend of mine. And we are lucky that he took a moment out of his busy schedule. They are getting ready for some huge shows coming up in Montreal. But meanwhile, we will be back next week doing what we do best. That's breaking necks and cashing checks. Right here on the Meltdown, baby. I will see you 1 week from today. Be safe. Much love from the Tomcat and the Creation of Devastation. Have a great week, everyone.